resume our meeting.
Do we have a quorum?
One, two, three, four.
No, we have five.
Yeah, okay.
All right, we're going to go ahead then with the staff presentation.
Well, first of all, I wanted to mention there was a question about who was on the phone. Donette Dunaway was our staff person who actually prepared this agenda item, and she unfortunately is ill, but she is valiantly standing by on the phone, and she'll probably help us out with answering questions and whatnot. So glad you could join us, Donette, but sorry you're not feeling well.
Thank you, Mr. Briggs.
And Jennifer Bidding of our staff is actually pinch hitting on short notice to give the presentation today.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm going to be presenting Donette Dunaway's presentation. So although it says Donette Dunaway, I'm actually Jennifer Bidding. Back again. I'm sure you've missed me. You haven't talked to me in a while. Okay, I'll speak up. Sorry. Okay, so this is the presentation for the City of Salinas Phase 1 MS4 permit. As you know, the Phase 1 MS4 permit, we only have one, and it's an individual permit for the City of Salinas for their stormwater discharges. Their first permit was adopted in 1999. That permit term, that is a 5-year permit term, and so it's time to reissue the permit. Is my microphone working?
We're trying to get rid of a hiss.
Okay. Is my mic?
Can you folks in the back hear Ms. Bidding okay?
It's a little hard for me to hear.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
I can.
Okay.
Well, we've got a microphone right here in front of this monitor amp. Amp and speaker. It's right there.
That's Donna. Can you hear me? Oh, she.
That's better.
Oh.
Brilliant.
Okay.
Obviously an engineer. Thanks, Harvey.
Okay, I'll start again. So Salinas is our only Phase 1 MS4, and their first individual permit was adopted in 1999. It has a 5-year permit term, and so it's time to reissue the permit. The focus of the Phase 1 stormwater program is pollutant source control through BMP implementation. Monitoring is used to measure the effectiveness of BMPs. By finding and eliminating pollutants at the source, fewer pollutants end up in creeks and streams. This is an aerial photograph, compliments of the City of Salinas, that gives you an idea of where the water bodies are in relation to the city. In drafting the permit, many things were taken into consideration. The existing 1999 Salinas permit and anti-backsliding laws. The 2003 audit that was conducted by staff. Also the annual reports that have been submitted annually in compliance with the current permit. Similar city permits are also Phase 1 municipalities such as Sacramento, San Diego, and Ventura. And also the Phase 1 permit template that was developed on contract by Tetra Tech, which was a contract with the State Board to develop a Phase 1 permit template that takes into account all of the existing Phase 1 permits, sort of the best of those, and come up with sort of a consistent permit template. Also the MEP standards, which I described in my presentation earlier today, Water Quality Order 2000-11 and other EPA directives, and also the financial situation of the City of Salinas. The permit has the following elements. There's the order, as well as Attachment 4, which includes the stormwater management program's revision requirements. Attachment 5 is the monitoring and reporting requirements. The other attachments, Attachment 1 is just a list of acronyms, and Attachment 2 and 3 are just maps. And Attachment 6 is a time schedule for implementation, sort of summarized from the order. So I'm just going to be going into detail on Attachment 4 and Attachment 5. Attachment 4 has all of the revisions that would be necessary to the existing stormwater management plan to comply with the new permit. It's in these 7 categories, and I'll go through each one in detail. It requires the city to inventory all active construction sites that disturb 1 acre or more that discharge to the city's MS4 and inspect them at least once a month during the rainy season and every other month in the dry season. High priority sites, such as those that are 5 acres and greater, should be inspected once a week during the wet season. Also requires that minimum construction BMPs be developed and literature be distributed to those in the construction industry. Also it requires the city to review stormwater pollution prevention plans for compliance with the order. It also requires annual training for key staff, training on requirements of the order and erosion and sediment control practices, inspection procedures, and enforcement procedures. It also requires a development standards plan, which is something that we've been talking a lot about this morning. They would have to submit and adopt for public review and for EO approval. They would submit their development standards plan to be adopted. It would be consistent with Water Quality Order 2000-11 that we discussed this morning. So it would have volume and flow controls for stormwater runoff to reduce erosion as well as pollution. And then the categories that we saw before that are in both Attachment 4 of the Phase 2 permit and also in the Water Quality Order 2000-11, those categories that are listed there that the design standards should apply to. Just an example of a pollution reduction BMP, something we've talked about this morning. Just an example of a low-impact development BMP here where stormwater goes into this rain garden and only overflows go into the storm drain system.
Where's that photograph taken?
That photograph is actually taken in the parking lot of the low-impact development incorporated, low-impact development company that's located in Maryland.
We ought to start getting some pictures from this region.
I agree. this is a photograph of that same site about a year later, so you can see from those original plantings how it turned out to be a larger plant layer. Just an example of this BMP. The stormwater management plan revision requirements also include requirements for commercial industrial facilities. So it requires the city to inventory commercial sites and industrial facilities and also develop a BMP brochure and distribute to industries or activity-specific brochures such as vehicle maintenance or fuel storage. Also requires the inspection of commercial sites and industrial facilities to ensure compliance with the ordinances in this order. Also requires municipal maintenance, things such as mapping the storm drain system that includes all inlets to the MS4 and all outlets from the MS4 to receiving waters. Also requires the inspection and cleaning of municipal facilities once a year, so catch basins, inlets, and outlets of the MS4 system must be inspected and cleaned at a minimum of once a year. BMPs and stormwater management plans for municipal maintenance activities should be designated, so and also they should ensure the implementation of the minimum BMPs for all municipal maintenance activities, such as street paving and buried utility repairs, just as an example.
Jennifer, on the inspection cleaning requirement, when does that have to be done in a certain month, or is it left up to their discretion as when they can do that?
The requirement just says currently at a minimum of once a year, so they would put in their stormwater management plan when they would do that. So they'd probably do that before the first rain event.
Well, which would make sense, but I mean, there's nothing that directs that be done. I mean, anybody could claim, well, we did it, in June or July or August, and it was really much easier to do it then, and had less of an impact or beneficial impact on water quality than doing it right before the first flush.
I could refer that question to Donna if she'd like to answer that, if there's an actual time that's specific within the
No, there's not a specific month that they have to clean it out.
Okay. That brings up a question for me is, this is the state program, their standard. To what extent can we enhance it and add to it, depending on what we think of as our local conditions?
Lori could probably better answer that question, to what extent. Of course, we have the ability to, these are minimum requirements, and we have the ability to increase those.
Well, there's no requirement to enhance water quality. There's just a requirement to reduce pollutants in stormwater.
But, I mean, if we wanted to, for example, put in this condition that the maintenance and cleaning have to happen in the fall before the first rain, could we do that? That's something over and above what the state standard says. So could we do that? And what would we have to do that if we wanted to make a local change?
Well, I think that's something that would be included in the stormwater management plan. And if staff felt that in order to meet the maximum extent practicable standard that these activities would have to happen in the fall, then in approving the swamp, that would be the appropriate time
so
to
staff
impose
could just do
that
it.
Requirement.
Okay. Good answer.
Moving on to the fifth category of revision requirements, which is illicit discharge detection and elimination. The city is required to conduct inspections of priority areas for illicit discharge screening at least quarterly, and also operate a hotline for illicit discharge reporting and maintain a log of calls. Also concerning the ordinance, they're required to update existing ordinances or adopt new ordinances and enforce the ordinances to give the city the regulatory authority to penalize illicit dischargers. Concerning public education and participation, the stormwater management plan must include education to these target groups, such as residences, businesses, and small construction sites, and so with the focus of increasing the knowledge and changing behavior to reduce pollutant discharges and stormwater runoff to the MS4. It also specifies media type and number of impressions, so there's 525,000 impressions per year that are required by these stormwater management plan revision requirements. And also that it's required to have annual meetings where it would be public notice so the public could attend. The city would present the information contained in the annual report and also present the activities planned for the following year. So now we'll move on to the monitoring and reporting requirements. They include background and receiving water sites as well as urban discharge sites that are within the city. And the monitoring and reporting requirements were drafted to be complementary to our Ag Waiver program and also CCAMP, our Central Coast Ambient Monitoring Program, as well as Urban Watch, First Flush, and Snapshot Day, which are programs that will be in place by the Monterey Bay Marine Sanctuary, and also the EPA Phase 2 Pollutants of Concern guidance document. This is a table from the staff report, actually. It's on page 29 and 30 of the staff report, if you're interested in viewing it. It just shows the sampling requirements that were in the 1999 permit versus those that are in this 2005 permit. You can see that the sampling, actual number of samples taken have been reduced from the previous permit term. The reason that we were able to do that is because there are already sampling going on through the Ag Waiver program and the CCAMP program, the Central Coast Ambient Monitoring Program, that can be used to collect data. So we're hoping that this will reduce costs for the city so that some of the other sampling that's already going on can be used to help them know what kind of background samples are coming into their city.
Excuse me, Ms. Bidding. You've got fewer samples, but they're more expensive. Have your staff figured out roughly what the cost would be if you did the old permit versus the new fewer samples but with the bioassessments?
I have not done it.
I did look at costs, and there's two things actually to consider. There's toxicity tests, which are included in this round of sampling, and then bioassessment, which is included every year instead of every other year. Is that okay on that feedback? And it's actually quite complicated to go over. Hello?
Yeah, okay. We're hearing you.
Okay. To go over right here, because as Jennifer will point out later, the sampling program has places where it ramps up, places where sampling can increase if needed, places where sampling can be decreased if they find that there's a non-detect. But there is an increase overall in costs on the sampling from the old permit term to this permit term, most likely, unless they find that there's a lot of non-detects, in which case they can drop out some of their sampling points.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
And my question I have about the sampling is there enough sampling going on that we have any degree of comfort, of certainty, that we're really getting an accurate picture? I mean, is this sampling statistically significant?
The sampling program is designed to match up with these other programs that Jennifer just mentioned, and we're actually increasing the number of samples taken per year so that we could get a better statistical readout over a shorter period of time as compared to what was in the last permit term. So it'll take several years before we do get something that we can look at statistically, but we should be able to gain that faster than we could with the last sampling program that was in place.
Okay.
I have a question about this, too. I'm kind of concerned. First of all, I'm completely comfortable with the idea of them using the ag testing, the CCAMP testing, to save them money. I'm a little concerned that it's not part of the program, is that they're not responsible for those, that they don't have to report those. In fact, in theory, I guess they don't even have to look at those. And I think it should be explicit part of the program that those samples are part of their sampling requirements, even though they can use the data these other groups are doing to save money. So
the data that's being collected by the other groups doesn't allow the city of Salinas to decrease their sampling. However, in having this program match up with what is going on region-wide, we can get a better picture of what is being contributed by the city on a region-wide basis. So is that where you're going with this? Maybe
well,
I didn't know.
Where I'm going with it, I mean, we certainly can look at all the data because we have all the data. I just think in terms of the permit requirements, you know, the city should be responsible for getting this data and having it and looking at it and analyzing it and then reporting it to us. And so it should be, the onus should be on them to make sure this happens rather than the onus to be on us to do this data integration analysis.
Correct. And that's where we need to make sure that they are reporting back in their annual report. When they're reporting on the effectiveness of their BMPs, that's where it's expected they will be looking at the data and their picture, you know, what their contribution is compared to what's going on in the whole region and taking into account what we know from the whole region.
So what I'd like to see is up here where we say three receiving waters and one background. It's actually three receiving waters and I think three or four background.
That's correct.
Only one of which they actually pay for, the other two for which they can get the data from this other group. But they're responsible for, you know, both of those multiple sets of data, receiving and background.
Well, another way to do that, as opposed to making that a sampling requirement, is in the reporting requirements to require that, in addition to the samples that the city takes, that they consider and analyze this data to the extent it's available. So if for some reason CCAMP data wasn't available or ag data wasn't available, they didn't have to pay for it.
Yeah, because that's the other aspect, is if for some reason one of these other sources fell apart, they would still need to be responsible for doing this because it still has to happen. So.
Okay.
Well, actually, I was saying the opposite, that if these other sources of data weren't available, since the idea is that it augments their sampling program, then they don't have to go out and do it.
Well, then if the background data isn't available, then having them collect receiving water data is kind of useless because we don't know what the background is to compare it to.
They have to collect one of their own background data, so we know that guaranteed there will be one. Right.
Okay, well, I think that we can save this for deliberations. I just wanted to point out there's another way to draft language to address these concerns.
Okay, these are, just to give you an idea of where the sampling locations are, this might help a little bit. As you can see where the upstream locations, those are the sampling points upstream, are purple-colored dots, and then for downstream are red-colored dots. That gives you an idea for what creeks are going to be sampled for the upstream versus the downstream. And then those orange points that are numbered, those are the samples that are referred to as the urban discharge sites. Those are the four urban discharge sites are in orange there. This table is actually table one of attachment five, so it's part of the permit. You have that if you want to take a look at it up close. This is the wet weather monitoring that's required, and those numbers in the column for parallel monitoring programs correspond with the other monitoring programs that are collecting that data so that we can get some useful data for all parties involved. So this gives you an idea of what wet weather monitoring requires.
Do you mind backing up one
sure.
slide, Jennifer? I just had a question. I was noticing that there are no urban sampling stations north of Natividad Creek. I mean, 52, 32, and 7, right? Those are the urban?
Mm-hmm.
And 1, right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if the purpose of sampling is to help locate sources of pollutants?
Can I jump in?
Of course.
Okay. The urban sampling stations were chosen based on, going back to their initial application, the city had identified their high-priority storm drain inlets, or outlets, I guess. And so I looked at the high-priority locations. They happen to be kind of at downstream points from the city, which is, I think, what you're noticing. And the way that the sampling program is written is that if they find that the receiving water levels are exceeding background levels or seacamp levels or trends that are typical of each of those sites, then they have to go in and do sampling at the urban discharge locations to try and locate the sources. If they still don't find the sources of the pollutants, then they have to provide to us a monitoring program that will look for the sources of those pollutants. And so that's when they would go in and probably move upstream and look for the sources of those pollutants. And they can look for sources of pollutants in multiple ways, one of which is water quality sampling. The other is by looking on the ground and trying to figure out logically what could be the source of, it depends on what the pollutant is, but if they have zinc, what could be the source of the zinc, and looking at the land uses in the area. So they have multiple ways to try and go about that, but the sampling program is set up in such a way that they can go in and look more in detail within their city. So we're going from a kind of a global approach, looking at the input water compared to the output water, and then kind of focusing in as needed in a more detailed manner as they find pollutant sources, or searching for pollutant sources, I should say. Sorry.
Can I ask a question? Why there isn't any monitoring on the Santa Rita Creek, which is the furthest north, and that creek flows into Espinosa Lake? And city has control of part of that rural area, if I can point to it. Of course, you can't see my pointing,
right,
but they do. That is part of their sphere of influence.
Right.
Well, I'm trying to learn how to operate this pointer. There we go. Right there. City has the control, the sphere of influence of that area right there. This is the city. This is Santa Rita Creek that runs right through here and runs into Espinosa Lake.
I'll tell you my thinking on that. One of the considerations that we had, which Jennifer had mentioned, was financial considerations. And the area that Santa Rita Creek runs through is a small portion of the city. Much of that is residential, so looking at land use. My thinking was that if they understand what their sources of pollutants are, if they're seeing that there's problems in the land use of residential, which they'll pick up, I think, from the other sampling points, then they would apply BMPs, hopefully, to the residential areas across the city, including the Santa Rita Creek area. Since that was such a small portion of the city, percentage-wise, land-wise, and because that land use will be captured as far as looking at it in the other sampling program, I considered that we could probably leave that out and then hit it as we needed if we find that there's residential sources of pollution.
Well, what brings that to mind? There is several lawsuits pending right now from agriculture areas that had bag salad that people were, I think one or two people died in Southern California from E. coli, from salads, and those ranches were right adjacent to the Santa Rita Creek. And that is an extremely important creek that comes through the northern part of the city of Salinas. And the city is in the process of developing that area in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
So I, as a board member, I would consider that we need to have a monitoring station.
It certainly could be added.
And Donette, my question, now that I have the pointer, which isn't going to help you, but everyone else will be helped by this, so I'll have to describe it. I would think that, you know, Station 52 is going to show elevated levels of pollutants. And so, you know, if you're trying to look at where are those coming from, the only other data we're going to have is going to be from 32. And we're not going to know whether Natividad Creek or Gabilon Creek.
It's Gabilon.
Gabilon Creek are sources for the pollutants we might see at 52.
You got upstream, though.
Is 52 on Santa Rita?
No, 52 is it's in the drainage ditch that comes out of Carr Lake.
Okay.
So I'm just curious what your thinking is at this point in not having. I mean, the upstream, isn't that supposed to be what we're considering to be background levels coming into the urban area?
I was just going to remind you, Donette, we do have the upstream stations on Gabilon and Natividad.
Okay, yeah, I'm getting a little lost. I'm sorry without the picture there.
Maybe I should explain just
go ahead.
Briefly. The concept behind the sampling program by sampling the upstream and the downstream sites, and I'm going to skip to this flow chart that might be of a help to you. It's attachment 5, or it's the flow chart in attachment 5 of the permit. So maybe this will kind of help a little bit, but there's the concept is that we'll sample the upstream sites and sample the downstream sites. And so then if the receiving water exceeds the upstream samples, then we follow the flow chart and dry weather sampling at the urban discharge sites occurs, so to try to find those sources of pollutants. Mm-hmm. And then if the probable pollutant sources are found and eliminated, then there's no further sampling. If they're not, then the next year they include the urban discharge points in the lab sample. So the idea is sort of, and we did this for the purpose of trying our hardest to save the city money essentially in their monitoring program by not doing any monitoring that wasn't necessary. So we're allowing them to determine first by those upstream and downstream, is monitoring even necessary on this stretch? And then once we've determined that, then we move into the city and find the source. So that way, at least we're not saying, okay, monitor everywhere throughout the city, maybe getting these non-detect hits, and then narrowing it down. We're starting sort of a narrow and getting bigger so that we're hopefully saving the city some money and prevent them from sampling.
Well, there's still the point of picking the right forensic sites, and I think that's
right.
The issue here.
Okay.
Are those four the right forensic sites, or are there others that would be better? I mean, 52 is pretty close to the downstream point, so I don't know.
Oh, for the urban discharge sites?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the way those were chosen, again, was by looking back and in the application process, the city did a really thorough analysis, and I think Jennifer has it there, but a really thorough analysis of all of the storm drain inlets and what the land uses were that were contributing to the storm drain inlets, and then they chose from those what were their high-priority storm drains, so meaning the ones that they thought would be most problematic, I guess, to have pollutants. And so those were the ones that I chose, and I was trying to look at different land uses and try and capture all of those so we weren't just focusing only on residential or only on industrial or commercial or what have you, but to get all of those land uses included in those storm drain inlets. And so that's how they were chosen initially.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Shalcross.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not understanding this. Are the sites that we're looking at on this map, are they just the ones that the city is responsible for? Or does this also include the Sea Camp and the other? Or is it apples and oranges?
I believe this map also includes the others, because in this slide where we have the city has three receiving waters and one background, or only one upstream. On this map, you see three upstream sampling locations.
That's true. And the downstream points, some of them match up with Sea Camp sites as well. They're the same sites as the Sea Camp sites. So Sea Camp doesn't have quite as extensive monitoring as what the city will have, so it will add to the Sea Camp monitoring program.
And what was the other organization that was going to?
The Ag.
Oh, the Ag. Okay. And is that
and
on here,
Monterey,
too?
And the Monterey Sanctuary as well.
Is it the case that the only one the city is responsible for is the one on the Salinas in terms of upstream?
Yes.
So the other four, the other three purple ones there.
Oh, on the rectage.
The other three purple ones there are not the city's responsibility.
I don't know which purple.
The purple dots are the sites that are marked as upstream sampling locations.
Correct.
They have one of them.
Right.
And then
I think
the
Ag
waiver has the other two.
I think that the city only has one upstream site in total.
Right.
And I think the only one that they're responsible for is the Salinas upstream, which means that the three upstreams marked on the city boundary are responsibility of other groups.
They are responsible for the rectage one. There's not an upstream Salinas. There's a downstream Salinas.
There's an upstream Salinas.
On the Salinas River.
That's the discharge into the Salinas River.
Discharge.
Up and downstream of that.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Right.
And then there's one on Gabilon, one on Natividad, and one on Alisal.
And Gabilon and Natividad will be picked up by the Ag Waiver Program.
And what about Alisal?
Alisal is the city. That's the rectage. Same thing.
So then moving on to the toxicity testing, this table can be found in Attachment 5, Table 3. Describes the toxicity testing that will be required. There's water toxicity, sediment toxicity, and also benthic invertebrate assessment. This is the flow chart that describes sort of the decision tree for making these decisions about where to monitor and when. So the idea is that the first year of the permit term, the discharger will have the opportunity to implement BMPs, and monitoring won't commence until the second year once they've had an opportunity to implement all of the BMPs that they plan to implement, hopefully saving them from sampling when they haven't implemented their BMPs yet, because the purpose of the sampling is to determine whether or not the BMPs are effective. In summary, the first year, they'll be updating their stormwater management plan and implementing the best management practices and working on their design standards, developing those. And then in year two, they would continue to implement best management practices and add monitoring. Then years 3 through 5, they'll continue their BMPs. And then monitoring will be modified as needed. So it'll either increase if they need to do more monitoring within the city or decrease if they're finding non-detect. And it'll also allow the use of outside groups. There are some proposed changes to Attachment 4 that the city has proposed and staff has reviewed and is comfortable with these changes. So these changes are added to Attachment 4. So this, if you want to follow along, it's on page 14. They give the sections of where these changes would go. Just clarification to reflect that BMP implementation must be required by permit year 4 and then fully implemented by year 5. So that just changes a little bit to allow the city one extra year for full implementation, but they'll be requiring these BMPs of the industrial and commercial facilities in year 4. So the BMPs will be required even though the city won't have to enforce them until year five. The next change is for commercial facility inspection commencing in the fourth year. This is changed from the third year due to the high number of facilities that need to be inventoried first. And there's two more changes. Wording is added to clarify that the permittee may write stormwater pollution prevention plan templates for parallel use facilities. So, for example, if they have many parks, they may write a stormwater pollution prevention plan that can be used at all parks, or many maintenance facilities, they could have a stormwater pollution prevention plan that would be general enough to be used at all of their maintenance facilities. And then in Table 6, Item 44, the wording is changed to match Attachment 4. Those would be the changes that the city is asking for and that staff concurs with. So in conclusion, we feel that the permit package as a whole is protective of water quality, meets the maximum extent practical standard, and is cost-effective approach for the city of Salinas. So we recommend the adoption of the Salinas 2005 permit.
Big question I have for you. How did they do with their first permit? In term, did they have to implement any BMPs?
Yes.
How did they do?
Maybe I'll defer that question to Donette. She's reviewed all of the annual reports, as she's the staff person responsible for this.
I'd like to know that. Donette?
Well, actually, I would refer more to our annual, our audit that Jennifer was on. And when we went in there, we found there were areas that were strong and areas that were not quite as strong. We found that the city had actually implemented a lot of BMPs and had done a lot of, good housekeeping kind of BMPs in their own municipal areas. They had some areas that needed to be improved as far as kind of what was on the ground and changing a few practices, but there was a lot that they were doing as well. They have a strong industrial inspection program where they're going out and making sure that BMPs are put in place in the industrial sites. Now what we're adding on this permit is the commercial sites, so that'd be, for example, like your restaurants. And that will be a big undertaking for them. They weren't required to do that on the first permit. With the construction program, I would say they're doing a fairly good job with that. I've been in correspondence with them throughout the years, really, on construction sites, getting them into compliance and working together with the city to get these sites in compliance. But I'd say that they're doing a pretty darn good job of making sure that BMPs are put in place and kept up to par on construction sites. There's always room for improvement, but it's looking pretty good. Jennifer, you want to add anything else from the audit of what we learned?
I think one of the things that we learned through the audit was that there were things going on that the city was doing that they hadn't really incorporated into their program, and they weren't reporting in their annual report things that were beneficial to water quality, so we encouraged them to include those in their stormwater management plan. And we actually discovered at the audit that there was actually more going on than we had known about.
Yeah. The area that we found, or that I thought was kind of the weakest, was really looking at effectiveness and also looking at their data that they were collecting. So they had been collecting water quality sampling data for 4 years, I guess, when we did our audit, and yet had not gone back and looked at what the data had told them, and so we found that to be probably the, in my opinion, I'd say the largest hole in the program was not kind of taking that and finishing the loop to tell them where they had, you know, more areas or issues that they need to look at and put in place. But other than that, they did have a lot of strong programs.
I think that answered part of my next question, and that is, does the current permit have the iterative process for sampling, assessing, and then implementing appropriate BMPs and making changes?
That's part of all municipal permits always. So,
okay.
Because part of MEP is that concept that technology is improving and our understanding of managing urban runoff is improving. BMPs are being invented or created all the time, and so it's sort of an ever-changing concept that we're always trying to find new sources, or, you know, that weren't discovered before, that are new, that didn't exist before. So the iterative process goes on throughout the whole permit term, even into the second permit.
Okay. And is Donnet telling us that the city did not do so well in terms of their own follow-up in reviewing and assessing the water quality data?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Is that something that, Donnet, you feel that the city understands is an integral part of this stormwater permit?
Well, I know that we've tried to make the point. You hope that they understand.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll explore that with them. Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah. I'm trying to understand, did we only find out that the city was weak in this one area when we just did this recent audit?
Well,
or has this been an ongoing thing that we've known about that was something that they needed to take care of?
I actually met with the city in the year 2001, I believe it was, and raised some concerns about the sampling program and what they were learning from this and so on. And at that time, I didn't push the issue. I probably should have. I kind of wish I had, but I didn't at that time. But it was something that was of concern to me, and it became more concern. When we first, back in 2001, we only had a few years of data. So, again, we kind of run into the problem of having that statistical analysis ability when you don't have a lot of data points.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and especially with stormwater, you get such huge fluctuations depending on when you take your sample. So it's kind of hard to determine if what you're seeing in the data points when you don't have very many of them is due to the strangeness of stormwater fluctuations, or if you're really seeing some trends, and so that was a problem.
Okay, I mean that's certainly reasonable. My concern was that we would issue a 5-year permit and then do an audit at the end of 5 years and find out there were some things that weren't done, and I don't think that's an acceptable way to do it. I think we need to, and it sounds like maybe we are, and with these. Now that we're going to have more of a background on the data, that certainly, bring these concerns to the board if you're finding that they're not doing what they need to do under the permit.
Right.
Thanks.
Mr. Daniels.
We're being asked today to approve this permit, but, of course, the plan isn't ready, and I think all of us would agree that the plan is the program. So is this plan going to go through the same cycle you were talking about earlier today about the phase two things where they'd be posted on the website and reviewed?
No, that is strictly just for the phase two permit because the permit has already been adopted at the state board level, and then each stormwater management plan.
So how does this plan get handled?
This one, the permit itself, you would adopt as the board, and then along with Attachment 4, which has the required revisions, and they would make those changes to their stormwater management plan. And we, of course, would review those and make sure that they're in compliance with this order as adopted.
And there's no public input on whether that's acceptable or not?
We added a provision to the permit language saying that interested parties will have a 30-day comment period. There was a comment from the Ocean Conservancy and NRDC requesting that the board hold a hearing on the revisions when they're submitted, and in my opinion, that's not required by law, but the board certainly has that option, and so we left that silent so that the staff can decide and the board can decide at the time after receiving the public input whether a hearing would be appropriate or helpful.
Well, does the board receive that input or just staff?
Staff and the discharger.
And who decides whether there would be a hearing?
The executive officer.
Okay. So the board won't really be in that loop. Will it just be
not necessarily.
Right.
Okay. Why not do it the way we do it for phase two, that if this can't be resolved privately, then it would come to the board. Would that be acceptable?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We would do that anyway because of the fact that the order requires the stormwater management plan revisions, and if those revisions aren't acceptable to staff, then that would be a violation of the order, and we would bring that.
But it might be acceptable to you, but it might not be acceptable to the public.
Right.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah. Sorry. Didn't mean to scare you there.
You're waving?
Yeah. In the 5 years that this permit's in effect, will the board be getting some sort of annual, and I don't mean it has to be like in a hearing, but in the EO's report or someplace, of you know how these different entities are doing?
We could certainly do that if you like. We, as staff, were receiving the annual reports and we're conducting inspections, and so we could always present you with an update on the status if you're interested in that. We'd be happy to.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to make it onerous to staff, but I'd sort of like to know, at least, you know, when you get the annual reports, maybe a paragraph or two on how they're doing. You know, if everything's okie dokie, well, that's fine. Or, you know, there might be some problems that maybe the board can weigh in on. Or
okay, and just in reference to this phase one permit, because the phase two permits, you know, those stormwater management plans will be adopted, you know,
right.
Soon, and so we won't be getting annual reports for
exactly.
A while. So we could do that annually or something if you
that,
like.
That would be fine, or whatever you think is reasonable.
I was just going to point out that we've provided updates for you on the stormwater program, mm-hmm. I don't know, two or three, four times,
mm-hmm.
And
once a year.
As we're getting more information now from the entities. We could simply add to those periodic updates.
That'd be perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks.
Okay. Should we move then to the city's testimony cards?
Actually, before we do that, okay. I have a couple things to address.
Sure.
The first one is the February 10th letter that
yes.
The board received from the city. This is in response to the staff report and the staff's responses to comments. And this was delivered to Mr. Briggs yesterday, and staff hasn't seen a copy of it. And our procedures provide that late submissions, and this is a late submission, will not become part of the record unless the chair rules that the exclusion would create a severe hardship and that no party, including regional board staff, will be prejudiced. To the extent that this letter reiterates comments that the city has already made, then there's no prejudice to the city or no hardship to the city from keeping this out of the record since it's late. And to the extent it raises any new material, it's prejudicial because neither the board nor staff has had the opportunity to look at it. So my recommendation is to keep this out of the record.
Mr. Well, Chairman?
Yes.
Over here. We have another one of those.
From
who? February 11th letter from the chamber as well. It's a one-page letter. It was just dropped off. It's on this item, so.
I need to review it and see if it's prejudicial.
Well, my take is I'd rather not allow these documents in because it's unfair for even the public to have a chance to review and comment. It comes in at the 11th hour. This doesn't prevent these parties from orally giving us their testimony, whatever would be in that letter you can tell us about. But you know, we do put in our notice that there's a cutoff on submissions, and it's just too late. We can't. I think we looked at this yesterday. There are 12 pages.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not reasonable to expect for us to expect our staff to have to respond to something like that at the last minute when there's other things on the agenda that are also in need of attention. So the two documents don't come in.
Okay.
But if those individuals are here that authored those documents, then they can tell us what's in them.
Okay. And the second issue is I have a couple of minor language changes to suggest to the permit and attachment 4, and staff was nice enough to type those up so you can see them on the screen. And hear them. The first one is in addition to the anti-degradation finding, and this language actually was in response to the Ocean Conservancy comments and was in the staff's response to comments, but the language didn't make it into the order. And it just says that the effect of the permit will be an overall improvement of receiving water quality, not degradation. The second change is on page 5. Paragraph 3. And this is in response to comments by the city that the definition of MEP shouldn't be in the findings. So this just references the discussion in the findings within the order. And page 7, paragraph 3. The city has commented that the regional board doesn't have the jurisdictional authority to require the city to secure the resources necessary to meet the requirements of the order, and I think that it's not really worth arguing about, so there's language that's up on the screen that you can read. The first part of that, requiring submission of an annual report, including a fiscal analysis, et cetera, is out of the application requirements in the stormwater regulations, and then the last sentence says inability to secure financial or other resources shall not excuse noncompliance with any provision of this order or any attachments, so that if the city can't demonstrate that they have financial resources, that isn't a violation of the order, but not complying with the order is. And then there was one change to attachment 4 that I thought the board might want to consider after the discussion this morning regarding trash and plastics. And I'm not sure if this is even redundant. In the 5 minutes that I had to review attachment 4 again to look for places where it may address the trash and plastics issue. 17. Page 17. You can just hit Control G, 17. Just to make it explicit that BMPs should be included to minimize infiltration of plastics and other trash into the storm drain system. And I'm not sure if this is the appropriate place in the order to put this. So staff is more familiar with attachment 4 and may think it should go someplace else. But that it, I use the language minimize rather than eliminate intentionally because of the MEP standard. That's it.
Okay. Should we go to our speaker cards? All right. Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. We have Denise Estrada, and then Robert Russell, Beverly Meamber, and Sarah Newkirk. And then we do have a number of cards from city staff, which in which they're just letting us know they're here for questions, but do not wish to speak at this time. And there's 5 cards like that.
Just a clarification, Bev Meamber was the person from the chamber, and she left at the lunch hour and has not returned. It's not expected to, so I believe you can withdraw her card from that. And Robert Russell has indicated to me that it was not his intent to be a speaker. His intent was to fill out a card for responses if necessary.
Okay.
So I think so it's primarily me.
Primarily you. Okay. So we'll take both Mr. Russell and Ms. Meamber off. And that'll leave you and then Sarah Newkirk.
Right.
All right. Great.
Okay. Executive Board and staff, my name is Denise Estrada, and I'm the Director of Maintenance Services for City of Salinas. And on behalf of the City of Salinas, I would sincerely like to thank you for the opportunity to respond to our permit at this location, which was certainly more convenient to the affected and interested parties that we anticipated being here today. Also, a special thanks to Danette Dunaway, here in spirit and voice, and Jennifer Bidding for their cooperation and working hard with us in providing an effective permit for this next term. And we did have some slides, so I believe we're working on that.
Okay.
While they're putting that together, staff has asked that I request a copy of the changes that you had on the slides, if that would be possible. We also have not had a chance to look at those and be able to respond to those.
We can put those back up on the screen, or you can look at my handwritten notes if that would be helpful.
Okay, so you don't have a hard-written copy?
No.
That I could circulate?
I don't mind giving you the handwritten version if that would be useful.
You know, do we have a printer we could take with us when we go on the road?
I thought you might ask that.
You know, it's so easy and they're so portable now.
Mm-hmm.
A little inkjet printer or something that
Okay. We
could use?
Yeah.
Okay. Ready to go? All right. With me here today are our staff members from our city attorney's office, maintenance services operations, wastewater planning, and development and engineering. The cards that have been filled out are so that they would also be able to respond. Rob Russell just whispered to me that he does have something specifically he would like to respond to in the comments. So I'll go on with my slide. The proposed permit is a renewal of Salinas' first NPDES permit, as you know. And during this first period, the city of Salinas made a significant monetary investment in the implementation of a responsible program to comply with the provisions of the Clean Water Act. It's the goal of Salinas to continue to protect the water, which we believe to be so critical to public health and to the economic well-being of our community. Salinas is the largest Monterey County city. It's located in a very complex watershed. With that, the water quality challenges of being physically located in an area of so many waterways in close proximity to the Monterey Bay are substantial. The quality of water entering the city has found to be negatively impacted by upstream discharges, which can have contributed elevated levels of nutrients, bacteria, and solids. The next photo that you're going to be seeing is a picture of Gabilan Creek. You saw that on the map as you were discussing the monitoring points with Donette. This is a point in Gabilan Creek at the close to the intersection of Barunda and Independence. This is where Gabilan Creek enters the city of Salinas. The photo you see was taken there, as I said, immediately as you enter into Salinas. Gabilan Creek historically has had silt loads from upstream erosion, which is shown in this picture, kind of the before and after. We have had to remove significant silt loads out of there periodically to maintain any flow whatsoever. These upstream discharges result in erosion and silt that we've inherited, including some very costly burdens. This has negatively impacted water quality in Gabilan Creek, the aquatic life, and certainly our city taxpayers. While these pollution challenges are significant, what's encouraging to staff is that there are so many organizations here locally and individuals working together on solutions for water quality problems. Salinas has been working collaboratively with other stakeholders on the regional watershed issues, and one of the things that we learned in our audit process is we really needed to do a better job of this collaboration. There's so many resources out there, everybody kind of doing their own thing, and I think the audit helped us to put in touch with some of these stakeholders. Just to respond to some of the concerns about, well, there are other stakeholders out there doing things, and will we necessarily be working with them? Laura Godotti Mills of the technical, she's technical program manager and cooperative for the cooperative monitoring program from the Central Coast Water Quality Preservation Incorporated, has made a formal meeting with our staff. We are working there with them. We have been working with the First Flush people, CCAMP. We're working closely with water resources. So we feel, even since the audit, we have begun to be a lot more aggressive in our approach with working collaboratively with the other stakeholders in the regional problems that we're all impacted by. Salinas acknowledge its responsibility to address the sources of urban pollution originating in Salinas. It's, however, our desire that the board help support an aggressive investment in the Ag Waiver Program to proactively work towards water quality improvement and reduce the burden that the city has from sources of pollution that are not contributed by our residents. I feel obligated to highlight a previously made point as it concerns our ability to implement the permit. As you see illustrated in the graph, staff has estimated that the overall costs of compliance for the new permit are going to be very significant. The cost to implement the new term provisions is expected to double over the term of the permit. I won't go a lot into our finances. I believe the mayor has very passionately gone over those with you, so I will not beleaguer those. But certainly, as we've been saying with staff all along, the funding is a significant problem. Salinas had a designated NPDES funding source. The court struck this down. City staff members now are working diligently to identify and implement alternative means to fund the NPDES program activities. Even with this order's requirement to secure financial resources, all our responsible efforts, we know, may not accomplish this requirement. Certainly, we will continue to do this in the diligence that it requires to comply with the permit. With the assumption that Salinas will be successful securing water funding, staff worked collaboratively with board members to develop an effective permit that was provided from the template that Tetra Tech had put together, and we went over with them at great length to produce the permit that you see before you today. As acknowledged in the board staff report, Salinas has expressed some very strong concerns about the inability to comply with the permit, again, primarily due to the lack of funding. We have worked with board staff, as they have told you, to program some of the more expensive activities of the NPDES program to later years, but we are still willing to, and as acknowledged in the permit, we will comply and we are willing to take on all of the scope that has been proposed of all the activities in the permit at this time. Again, near the conclusion of the hard work that we put in, our financial well-being diminished even beyond the expectations of those staff members. So we are really concerned that we will have some jeopardies of this, but we are working diligently to overcome that funding issue. During the formal comment period, Salinas submitted to you a detailed letter of concerns and objections to the permit provision. The City of Salinas respectfully asked to preserve for the record these objections and issues of concerns that have already been provided to the board in writing. Notwithstanding these concerns, the City is now agreeable to the revised permit as proposed today by the board staff and will commit to diligently pursuing the work to our best ability. What I would also like to just add, kind of in closing here and open up to questions, is just a couple of corrections. The areas on Santa Rita Creek, just north of Salinas, that we were looking at are county areas called Burunda area. The area to be developed just north of that, you saw on the map where you were discussing the monitoring stations, that is proposed as a county development, not in any close to final stages and very controversial here locally, as Russ can tell you, but that is a county development, and at this point the City is actually formally and legally objecting to the development of that site, just for clarification there. I've asked to get a copy of the revisions there, and I think at this point I will open it up for questions to me, and then my staff is here. I may defer some of the questions to staff who are here kind of representing different disciplines within the city. So thank you. Some questions?
Any board questions of Mrs. Estrada? Mr. Daniels?
As you may have heard in some of our earlier discussions, one of the things that very much interests us is trying to reduce not just the quality of, or increase the quality of the stormwater runoff, but to reduce the quantity of it. And so, I mean, what sort of plans and ideas do you have for how the city can participate in that process?
Well, we have mutual goals in that area, too. They obviously, the impacts, the negative impacts that you talk about by not complying certainly will affect our community. The development standards that are proposed and some of them that are already in the works, we're very hopeful we'll get to those goals. Everything that are put into the permit, I think, you know, obviously we're prepared to comply with and we're hopeful. And if that doesn't seem to get to the goals, as you can tell by the permit language, it's a dynamic analysis of how things are going that goes on through the life of the permit. If something isn't working well, it's our obligation to go in there, identify what's not working well, and propose back to regional board staff solutions that we believe will accomplish those goals.
Do you all have then sort of tentative language you're thinking about for development standards in that area? Or?
You know, I might want to refer to Rob Russell to answer that, because as the deputy engineer and the development director for Department of Engineering, I think he could probably more respond to that if you'd be okay with that.
Yeah, and I'll be up here again as well, just to address some stuff that was said before the break. But we are looking at our zoning standards. The uniqueness of Salinas, and I don't know how familiar you folks are with the Salinas area, the soils and things of that nature, certainly Russ is. The challenge we wanted to go into, and we will continue to pursue low-impact developments and trying to retain stuff on site. I'll get in when I get up the next go-around on several detention facilities that we currently do have. We are looking at attempting to, you know, create more open spaces, and quite honestly are going into a new urbanism profile. And with new urbanism, quite honestly, your densities go up, and the hope is that you don't have to take in any more ag land, so the ag lands can stay as they are, and therefore you're not bringing in lands that will generate more. That, quite honestly, is really where we're at.
Okay.
What's your sense of how the developer community reacts to proposals for, or I should say, encouragements for low impacts to water quality and storm runoff? Are they receptive? Are they working with you? Are they resisting?
Quite honestly, right now we are finishing up really the development that has been approved, and that doesn't really include a lot of low impact. It basically includes the retention detention facilities that we talked about.
Yeah.
We are looking at new urbanistic standards, new urbanism standards, and we really haven't talked about that particular portion. In the general conceptual plans that they're looking at, some of them are looking at that low-impact development. I will tell you the clay soils here really aren't conducive to hardly any percolation whatsoever. We did go up to the city of Livermore, where they're doing some of this low-impact development, and they had both good and bad, because what happens is you do create those swales, and it does create an opportunity. But much like what we find is that your residents go out on a Saturday, and the next thing you know, your ditch is concreted in. And so then it becomes a policing power that then gets transferred over to us, and then quite honestly, we do not have the staffing levels to do that.
How do they get cemented in? What do you mean by that? Trash?
You go down to Orchard Supply Hardware, you get a couple of bags of concrete mix, you mix it up in your wheelbarrow, you pop it out there, and you're done. We've had several instances where we've had approved developments come in. Property owners are given all the information with regards to these are the city standards. One of those standards is you're not supposed to be concreting in what's called a park strip, or the area between the curb and the sidewalk. However, you know, once the property owner is in there, the next thing you know, there's patios that are being concreted in the back so that they can enjoy a nice barbecue with their families after hours, which increases that stormwater runoff. They don't want to maintain the non-turfed area, so either they go back in with turf, which we don't allow because of the water quality issues that we have here and the seawater intrusion. And so basically it's easier for them to go in there and concrete it in.
And what do you do about it when you see that?
When there has been occasion when we have gone back and we've said that you have to take it out. And it's quite honestly not a pretty situation.
Have you been successful in getting the...
Generally speaking, I would say no.
Okay, question I had for you is, who on staff is responsible for reviewing the monitoring data as it's generated, assessing it, and going through this iterative process of deciding whether new or different BMPs should be implemented?
That's done in our wastewater division. The wastewater division is a division of maintenance services under me, so ultimately I am responsible.
Okay. And I just want to make sure that you understand that this is kind of a responsibility of the discharger.
There's no question that we understand
that. Okay.
Yes.
So that you're not waiting for our staff to review the data
right.
and then to make suggestions, but, you know, you
right.
get... You get brownie points
right.
by doing this on your own.
Our data previously has been analyzed by consulting firms. I don't necessarily have strong disagreement with Danette's assessment of our program. However, I would say that we did diligently attempt to do a monitoring program and analyze it. It certainly wasn't to the extent that she felt was as aggressive as you'd like to do in that. But nonetheless, we did hire Camp Dresser McKee's engineering firm to do the data analysis on that. They provided that, and it is included in the annual reports each year.
What was their conclusion?
Their conclusion was that there were no identifiable trends in the findings that they had. So they didn't find any hot spots that, you know, were contained with any one thing. And what they also made a very strong point is saying that the water coming into Salinas is, as I mentioned in my presentation, already negatively impacted by a number of upstream discharges. We've inherited a number of negatively impacted water, impaired water, and then their analysis is that we don't have any trends in there. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't a problem, but there are no hot spots. You can take that to mean that water coming in is bad. We don't see any problem by the time it's going out. Our position was that sounds good to us. It sounds as if we had done a good job instead of adding additional negative impacts to it.
Did your consultant also conclude that perhaps the monitoring location of stations and frequency really wasn't sufficient to detect trends?
Their suggestion was that we look at revising those, in part because as the data, as our experience grows with the program, we learn different things. The other thing that's significant, as Danette pointed out, there's a lot more players out there collecting data now. So rather than duplicate data points for us to collaboratively come up with something that really identifies the problems of the watershed as opposed to just focusing in on their made sense. We should share data, which we have been doing and work together on them. So our consultant said, based on that, yes, it is time to look and see if revisions to the monitoring plan and the stations were, it was time to do that. So we agreed that that was a viable thing for us to do.
One thing we wouldn't want to punish a discharger for is if the baseline keeps changing, which is something that's happened in water quality a lot in the last 20 years. If you don't collect for certain constituents in the early years and then you collect for them later, it's a moving target. So I just would want to be sensitive to that point, because I think we're adding new monitoring in this particular permit. So the baseline changes again.
Well, the toxicity,
yeah.
Right, is being added.
Right.
What, and what Donette or Jennifer, what do we know about the sources upstream? Are there other MS4s, or is it all ag, or is it what?
It's primarily ag.
All ag.
Yeah.
All ag.
And I don't know if Donette wants to elaborate on this, but the previous upstream sampling locations were actually upstream of the agriculture as well. So the information that we got then from the downstream sites didn't really tell us it was coming from the city or from agriculture. So that's why these upstream sites have been moved in closer to the city, so it's at the city limits.
Mr. Daniels.
Yeah, something the previous speaker said that kind of shocks me, and I want to kind of bounce it off of you, that this is not just a program of kind of doing programs and crossing T's and dotting I's. That, I mean, it's as well a because the city alone can't do it, just like we alone can't do it. You've got to get your citizens to do it, and so it's an issue of education we've talked about and enforcement. And if you can't get your citizens not to concrete over city property out in front of their houses, I'm concerned that you're going to be able to really operate this system. I mean, because you will have to sometimes go in and do enforcement. You have to be nasty and to make that happen. And so I'm concerned about that.
Staff is capable of being nasty. There's just not enough of us out there. Oftentimes there are situations in which we are able to go in with a homeowner and convince them what they have done is not to their best benefit and certainly is a violation of the city ordinances. However, again, with that, and this goes back to his department, the encroachment officer has the responsibility to go out and to accomplish that, and it's by a complaint basis. It's a large city. We have one encroachment officer, and so it's a large city. It's a challenge. I mean, staffing is certainly a challenge, and one of the costs of an expanded program is to add staff to it. So it's a concern for us, too. As collaboratively as we wish to work with everybody else in this program and recognize that's how one of the only ways we're going to make it work, it is a concern for us as well that we have enough staffing.
Well, it's also, I think, not just staff. I mean, staff is certainly an important part of it, but it's also setting an example. I mean,
right.
You know, if you go out and just say, please don't do this, and they don't do it, and you say, okay, well, goodbye, then you kind of get that kind of behavior continuing.
Repeating itself.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes you've got to go and bring out the jackhammers and tear it out and find the person, and that will appear in the paper. And when people see it, your incidence of that kind of stuff goes down. And you sometimes have to be prepared to do that. And so I'm hoping and expecting that you've got that kind of commitment to do that when it's necessary.
Yeah, I believe that's consistent with the way we've been handling most of them. Salinas likes to be kind to his residents, but sometimes, obviously, there are instances where enforcement ramps up to the next level and there are fines imposed.
You can blame it on us.
I'm sorry?
You can blame it on us. You say, we wouldn't have done that, but there's
nasty
regional old
board.
The regional board.
You're generous in that.
I live far enough away.
There are other questions that staff can answer? I know Rob had indicated he had some additional ones, and I don't know if it's in order to allow him to process at this point.
And who's that?
Rob Russell.
Sure.
Okay. Rob?
Well, thank you. Thank you again. My name is Robert Russell. I am the deputy city manager, or one of two deputy city managers here with the city of Salinas. And I would like to thank Jennifer and Donette for their work in this. I think actually we have tried to collaborate and try to figure out a way to create some win-wins on this. And I think we're getting there. I would also got to say that I am the Salinas city engineer, the traffic engineer, and the building official. And I say that because this is pretty much what's happening in our organization, is many of us are wearing many hats, and we are losing critical positions. And some of those positions are the people that worked on bringing this to you and worked with Donette to get this to where it is today. So the challenge of additional responsibilities is I think, the real concern here. And without being able to add staffing, and we realize we're not going to be able to add staffing without some other type of a funding source, that it will be difficult to continue to raise the level. With that, I will say that after our first permit was issued, we did have Camp Dresser McKee come on board, and they did take a look at our storm drain systems, and they did develop this stormwater master plan that was actually completed in May of 2004. Included in that was some planning criteria, and part of that planning criteria was a stormwater detention section that got down to some of the stuff that we have historically done over about the past 10 years. But was really never formalized. With that, we also came up with, and I know you can't see it, but a new standard plan and specification booklet that was recently adopted in 2004 by the City of Salinas Council, and included in that is new development standards, design standards. This is on the website. It's available to our development consultants because it includes some of those detention requirements that were included in here that we've used from what was formerly the Monterey County Flood Control, now the Monterey County Water Resources Agency. It includes information on source control BMPs to be utilized in design, and it actually includes details. And actually, with Jennifer's assistance, we had these details available to our development community for installation on building permit plans, subdivision plans. Found some miscues, we've modified those, and those are now adopted standards. Adopted standards not only in this booklet, but on the website. And we are spreading the word, working very closely with our chamber group and the development community in an attempt to get them on board. So I can guarantee you that new developments that's coming into this city, that's 1 acre or more, are going to have all kinds of BMPs. We have pretty much an established standard. We got roughly 5 to 6 engineering firms in the city of Salinas that are now very familiar with what we require, and we do have one subdivision inspector for the city of Salinas. And the good news, I guess, at this point is our development activities have gone quite a bit down, so they're really only working on one or I think 2 or 3 subdivisions. Take that back. We're completing one, so they should only be working on about 2 subdivisions. With regards to, I heard some concerns with regards to there are no detention ponds within the city, or there may be limited number. This is the Camp Dresser McKee map, and included in there is all of the existing kind of waterways, and I know you'll never be able to see this, but it is available. But included in this are detention ponds that have been established at the Salinas Auto Center as it was developed, the Westridge Shopping Center as it was developed, the Hardin Ranch. There's actually 3 of them. One's an internal to the parking lot, and 2 of them are in actual park areas. The northeast area where we did a very substantial detention facility out there, and in collaboration with the group called Return of the Natives, they're actually bringing in willows and native material out there to basically provide some benefits from the water quality standpoint. We also have detention facilities in the Northgate Park, Chavez Community Park, a Mill Lake open space area. We are planning one in the Montebello area and have an interim currently that was required of the first phase, and within the Atoni Business Park. Again, most of those are vegetated facilities. And they're vegetated for 2 reasons. One is to try to get that percolation, if at all possible, and 2 is for the water quality aspects. So I don't want you thinking that the city is sitting on their hands waiting for something to happen. We're attempting to make it happen, and we are doing outreach to both the chamber groups and the development and community development groups. Also, the Wreck Ditch, the Carr Lake area, and the Markley Swamp also act as kind of historic lakes within our region that provide other retention and detention type facilities. And in areas and developments that were unable to actually create ponds, we created oversized on-site storm drain systems with meters going out, maybe a 12-inch pipe going out, and 48-inch pipes actually extended within the site so that water can be stored and things are metered out so we don't have this huge deluge coming down. I wanted to clarify a little bit in the Santa Rita Creek, because the Santa Rita Creek certainly does go through the city of Salinas. It's on the northern portion there. But as it goes up Russell Road, it also goes through some historic development areas that are actually in the county area. And most of those homes are on septic systems. And so I'm not sure what kind of negative impacts potentially are being a result of that. That certainly is something we should probably be considering.
Rob, can I interrupt you right there, since you're talking about the Bolsa Knowles area?
Mm-hmm.
That is in the sphere of the city. Is that not correct?
Not in the sphere of influence right now, no.
You took it out? It was in there when I was on the council.
It's not there to mine. No.
So it's been changed?
I don't believe it's been changed for 20 years. But I got to tell you, I don't want to sit here and debate because I honestly don't know.
Well, I do know, but I think you better need to go back and check, because the Bolsa Knowles is in the sphere of influence in the city of Salinas. Can you also address that? I understand that you're in the process of application to LAFCO, mm-hmm. to annex land to build 12,000 to 14,000 houses.
That's correct.
And can you show us where that is going to go? And I hope that you don't come back in 10 years, and I probably won't be on the board at that time, but who knows? But I have a good idea where that's going to go, but I hope that you, in fact, I would insist that the city of Salinas impose in those developments all these types of stormwater protection areas throughout that development, because that's going to be a very large development.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And actually, there are, let's see if I don't poke my eye out here. Basically, the area, the new development area is going to be all out here. And we're under the preliminary designs right now, and we are looking at, you talked about wanting to retain open space areas along those creek corridors, and that's exactly what's included as part of these conceptual plans right now. And so we will be looking at corridors through here, and all through these little creek tributary areas. And as part of that, certainly the retention-detention facilities will need to be included as part of that, because our downstream storm drain system in the city, the existing city limits, cannot accommodate any more discharges. And so they are going to have to mitigate those impacts. We are going to be looking at some of the low impact, especially out in this area where the soils are a bit sandier. Some of the areas over here have a little bit higher clay layers, but we are going through the environmental process in this. So we are preparing environmental impact reports on this, development designs, and we will be looking at both new urbanism but also trying to figure out some low impact strategies that we might be able to utilize there.
Well, as my understanding, that you're looking for a higher density per acre, which means there's going to be more roof lines, which means there's going to be less areas for percolation of any kind.
That's correct.
But you're going to have more runoff.
Well, and that's one that you could debate, because you're, the difference is if I create very tight densities down here, that means instead of doing just this little area to accommodate those 14,000 homes, I would have to extend my boundaries further out, which means more streets. And those are the other things we're looking at, narrowing up the streets as much as possible. But tighter development means that I don't have to get into this land out here or this land out here. And so what we're hoping to accomplish is to retain all of our control, because in our 1988 general plan, basically the general plan that we adopted in 2002 is darn near the same as we adopted in 1988. The limits were essentially out in this area, and there were a couple of additions down in here to try to create kind of a western bypass, or an eastern bypass, excuse me, around the city to enhance traffic circulation. But as we do that leapfrog, as you go into the, the Central Valley cities, where everybody wants a quarter acre, well, what's happening is those urban areas are getting greater and greater and greater, which means there's more infrastructure needed, more sanitary sewer lines, more storm drain lines, and you are correct in that each individual lot will have more potential to percolate their runoff. The problem is the additional streets aren't being taken into account in that type of a development.
Yeah, I think we need to be encouraging infill or higher density. What densities are you looking at per acre? How many units per acre do you think?
They really do vary.
From what to what?
They go up as high as, well, in our downtown area?
No, in the new development.
In the new development area, I believe it's 20, 30 units per acre.
Oh, that's pretty good.
So in some of those areas. Now, I got to tell you, that's not the whole development, however. I mean, it's a transitioned land use. And so, you know, you get on those fringes. Our standard, I mean, our big lots here in Salinas are 6,000 square foot lots. Those are the larger lots here in Salinas. And certainly because of the street designs and things of that nature, you'll get a couple that are 10,000, 14,000. But for the most part, we have units that are going in on 3,000 square foot lots in certain areas. Most of them are in the 4,000 to 5,000 range.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I think if you're going to build this kind of a huge, almost new city, that you should try and make it as much as possible a kind of a model. And you know, like we're talking about, it'd be great to have some of these pictures that we had of your community rather than having to get someplace in Maryland that we have pictures of.
Don't disagree with you.
And I think maybe to do this, I mean, the density you're talking about, and there are indeed some advantages to having more density, you have to be more creative in solving these problems. Like, for example, when you run the pipes, the stormwater pipes underground, make them pervious. You know, to allow the stormwater. You don't just think of stormwater as something we get rid of, but think of something that we can try and be preserving and detaining. One way is just to have the pipes be pervious so as it can leak out into the underground.
And that's certainly something we can take a look at. And I will tell you that the engineers that I've talked to, that kind of development over in the Monterey Peninsula, the Marina area, they have got great soils because
sure.
It perks everything.
Sure.
And we really have had a challenge here. But I will say, like, the Gablin Creek Corridor certainly is an area that we've been able to percolate. Unfortunately, we've also had some sedimentation issues out there. So it's a bit of a balancing act. And I got to tell you, and certainly your major concern is going to be water quality. But the other things we need to take a look at are transportation issues, actual water usage because of seawater intrusion issues that are coming our way, obese kids, how do we create those walkable communities, how do we reduce the number of trips that are being made, mm-hmm. and several other federal mandates that are coming our way. And so it is a bit of a balancing act. And so as I do appreciate, you know, the position that all of you are in, but we need to take that and the other various issues that we have to make sure that we're creating a balance but trying to scratch the itch or meeting the needs that you folks have.
Okay.
Mr. Russell, I have a question for you. I'm just curious about your response to this. It's on page 22 of our staff report, the upper left column, and staff was reiterating something from your letter. And it said, the city states, given the results of the city's monitoring program, which show that of the water site sampled, the city has either maintained or improved water quality for 61% of the creek reaches within city limits over the past 5 years. Now, I know our staff took some issue with that, and I'm interested to know if the city has any opinion as to what they think might have contributed to that increase in
quality.
Increase in water quality or reduction in pollutant loading. If you guys identified BMPs that, really worked and you could tie to this?
I got to tell you, the BMPs, and I'm going to let Denise kind of ask, the standard BMPs we have for all development is primarily related to construction. And they're going to be putting the old straw wattles around the entire site. They're going to be gravel bagging the inlets. They're going to be putting their access, the gravel over filter fabric in. They're going to be putting a concrete washout facility, and we're going to go out there and monitor them. And before it rains, we're going to monitor. And when we think there is a rain, we're going to be out there monitoring that thing. We've done a thing now where during construction, as typically streets go in. We've eliminated the last, what's called the lift of the asphalt on the streets, and what it does is creates kind of a little mini holding basin on the actual street segment. So we pave it up, and then you got this inch and a half that kind of sits there, and the water's there, and then we notice that after the rains go and water finally does evaporate, we actually have layers of silts and things that are doing that kind of stuff. We're doing more vortex-type inlets, and we haven't really done much anything with those except for the last couple of years. And I think we only have two or three actually installed, but they seem to be very good from what I read in the engineering guides. And then the other thing, again, is the Return of the Natives program, because on a lot of our creeks and corridors where we really didn't have much available, we've put these things in, and they seem to have cleaned up at least those particular corridors. Now, albeit, you know, the reclamation ditch is a completely different animal, doesn't have any of those fine landscape-type facilities. And Denise maybe have a better idea, but, I mean, those are kind of the things that we're looking at.
Well, and I'm just interested in what you might tie that improvement to.
I believe it's a collective effort. I think what Rob's identified is a significant piece in terms of our growing community and putting standards in place and being able to enforce them on new construction. But I think it's the entire program. We have really focused a lot of energy on public education. Actually, before our staffing has got us, our dollars got as tight as it, we increased our wastewater staff. We have been very happy with the last annual report because our sanitary sewer systems were in the past failures, got by us, people didn't call them in, things went to the storm drain, and we had pollution. This past year, the amount of damage that we got in terms of broken sanitary sewers came from private laterals on older homes, but people are calling us now. They know that it's a problem. They're calling us. We're getting out there quickly. We have a really proactive staff, and that was one of the things I think in our audit was recognized that we do very well. So I would say it's a piece of everything. The program that Rob is talking about is a product of CSUMB's Watershed Institute. A great public education program, and I'm going back, I believe, to it was Mr. Press who made a comment about, well, maybe the investment at K through 6 may not be such an important thing. Well, we've taken the position that it's huge. That program has taken hundreds and hundreds of children out and taught them the kinds of things they need to do to protect the waterways. And they're funded through programs that we have supported financially and grants. So I just think it's the total program. As this program and our awareness of what we're supposed to be doing and being educated to it, I think that's what made us, I think, have the successes that we have. And I believe we're going to improve in that.
Okay, thank you.
And if I could just add, I think the detention basins in certain locations may actually assist. Because like I said, most of them have some type of a greenery with them. And so we have, detention basin essentially located right here. And historically, we've had like a tributary coming through here. So we have a lot of drainage now coming through here before it goes out into the Markley Swamp area. We do have all of this that drains through kind of greenbelt areas here and greenbelt areas here, and this is primarily where the Return of the Natives work has gone. We have the new facility that was just installed here, and I'm trying to think there's some stuff here. I think those are probably the primary ones that we have, and then we have one that now is in here, but that wouldn't show up on any of the information you have. So we're trying to become more green friendly on these detention facilities.
Okay, thank you. If we don't have any more questions, why don't we then go to our sole public speaker?
I have a request from our staff for just a moment. The changes that were put up here, and that we have in the hard copy, There was a request to take a five-minute break just to caucus on those so we can understand them just a little more clearly. If we could ask for a five-minute break and your indulgence for that long so that we can just quickly look at those, if that would be acceptable.
That's acceptable.
Comments first.
Should we do the speaker first?
Yeah.
Okay. You know what we'll do first is we'll have our speaker, last speaker, and then we'll take a break after Ms. Newkirk has a chance. Last but not least, right?
Maybe smallest.
No, I don't think so.
Chairman Young, members of the board, I'm Sarah Newkirk with the Ocean Conservancy. First, we'd like to thank staff for a great job in developing this permit. We'd especially like to note the strong standard for the reduction of pollutants in stormwater discharges, specifically prohibiting discharges that cause or contribute to violations of water quality standards. As you know, the standard was recently upheld in the Building Industry Association against the State Water Resources Control Board case, and we agree that it's the appropriate standard to apply to this permit. We also appreciate staff's care in responding to our concerns regarding the monitoring program. Although the State Board has yet to set formal stormwater monitoring standards, as it's required to do under the Water Code, it did convene a model monitoring technical committee that put together a model monitoring program for Southern California. Although the committee did adopt a number of recommendations that are applicable statewide, and specifically it noted that there are five core management questions that any monitoring program needs to be able to answer. And the questions identified by the committee largely assume that urban stormwater runoff has a detrimental effect on receiving waters. This is a fair assumption given the volume of reports and studies that have identified stormwater runoff as the single most significant source of pollutants to surface waters nationwide. But the monitoring and reporting program actually contains no such assumption, and it is adaptive enough to answer the five core management questions, but only once the evidence demonstrates that there is a detrimental impact on receiving waters. This is more than fair and very flexible, and we think it's legally justifiable as well. With respect to the city's cost concerns, we would just like to note that the permit is very flexible in permitting them to select BMPs that fit their needs and fit their financial constraints. And we'd also like to note, as staff did in its response to comments, that these permit requirements are applicable nationwide. Communities everywhere are complying with them. They parallel the Phase 2 requirements, and so smaller and more cash-strapped communities than Salinas are even being required to comply with them. Moreover, the additional flexibility in the time frame that was noted by staff will also reduce costs. However, we're pleased to hear that the city intends to comply with all of the requirements in its permit, and we thank them for that. Finally, my one and only complaint is that if the board decides to approve this permit today, it will be technically putting – can I finish up? It'll be technically putting the cart before the horse. EPA's got interpretive policy memorandum on reapplication for municipal separate storm sewer systems that requires that in the reapplications, and I quote, municipalities should identify any proposed changes or improvements to the stormwater management programs. Now, although staff has identified the changes that will be required, the applicant has yet to propose the actual changes. We appreciate staff's clarification of this, suggesting that the public will be given notice and the opportunity to comment. However, given the flexibility with which the EPA's policy guidance is being applied to Salinas, we request the additional element of protection for the public that the board review the swamp when it's submitted, not simply the executive officer. In conclusion, we generally support the permit renewal with the caveat I just mentioned. The vast majority of the revisions to the permit will improve our ability to resolve and characterize stormwater impacts and will increase the level of protection afforded to receiving waters. Furthermore, all of the revisions are legally defensible, and once again, we thank staff for their great work. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Daniels.
Would you be happy with the language that I was proposing previously, that
If I understood you correctly, you were suggesting that if there were public objections to the stormwater management program, that it would be reviewed by the board, and we would be happy with that.
Okay. And all the other problems you had in your letter you submitted, and staff had some responses, you're now comfortable with all those?
We're largely comfortable. The one thing that I wasn't aware of was the large development that's being proposed, and we hope that the monitoring program would be flexible enough to move the upstream sites to upstream of the new development when that occurs.
Yeah. In fact,
thank you.
Maybe even beforehand, so we get a snapshot of what it's.
Thank you. Any other questions of Ms. Newkirk? Okay. So we'll now take our 5-minute break. Okay, so we are at board deliberation. Is that correct? No?
The point of the recess was to ask for a clarification.
Sure.
The new language that was provided today, we hadn't had an opportunity, so we very quickly with staff looked it over, spoke to your attorney for a clarification. I believe we're okay on one. We had a concern about one of the changes that said the effect of the permit will be an overall improvement of receiving waters, not degradation. We understood that we couldn't negatively impair, and our question related to that. And I don't know if your attorney would like to explain the point of putting that in there that you provided to me.
Yeah, that was just an additional finding to support the anti-degradation conclusion that the permit complies with state and federal anti-degradation requirements. And it says that compliance with the permit will improve and not degrade water quality. It doesn't add any additional requirements imposed on the city to improve water quality.
Okay. And the second issue is gone.
Okay. It's top of page 8.
The second issue related to the financial requirement to complete the activities of the permit. And it's section III basically says that you can't use lack of funds as an excuse not to comply with the permit. My question to your attorney was, if we get in the unfortunate situation where we are not able to secure additional funding and we find that it jeopardizes our ability to perform the permit, what is the process for us to then come forward and basically say this is the situation? Is it an amendment? Do we request an amendment? Do we simply come before the board? Obviously, there'll be staff discussions with board staff to say this is our situation. Certainly, we hope not to find ourselves in that situation. We are diligently looking at avenues to secure the funding, but my question to your attorney was what do we do if we're in that situation based on what this says? We're not looking for excuses, but obviously this board needs to know our ability to comply with it and be updated. So I guess that was my question.
Yeah. Well, I agree the first step would be to go to staff and propose amendments to the swamp, and I agree that the MEP standard is a flexible standard, but there are minimum requirements to meet that standard, and just like with any Clean Water Act requirements, it's not, you can't avoid having to comply with Clean Water Act requirements because it's difficult, or I don't want to say impossible, but it's extremely difficult to get the money to comply with the requirements. So the swamp has to continue to constitute MEP, and maybe there might be ways that the swamp could be amended in that situation, but I don't think that alone would be enough to change what standards the city had to comply with.
If there's a non-compliance, might there be time order kind of things that could be applied to say we've got so many years to come into compliance? We often do that with other violations on there.
Right. We have the ability to do cease and desist orders that include time schedules to come into compliance. And obviously, even if we wanted to take some sort of financial enforcement action, one of the things we have to consider in assessing civil liability is the discharge's ability to pay the civil liabilities. I don't want to prejudge what the board might or might not do in that situation, but this is all pretty flexible.
Okay. It, it's certainly our hope to be able to fully comply with that. That is our intent. We just, based on where we are, and you've heard all of our concerns in that arena, we wanted to know what that process would be, if it would be. So I thank you for the clarification.
You know, if I could just add to that, I think what we want to see is progress, forward movement, availing yourselves of every possible resource you can, being creative, and then, you know, should you fall short, at least there would be positive things, you know, to balance out, maybe not being able to do everything that you'd like to do.
Well, we certainly are going to undertake with great due diligence everything that is possible, including trying to go after the funding to do this. As I said, we appreciate the goals, and we'll certainly try to work for those. Yeah. Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you. Okay, I guess staff is ready to wrap up for us. Is that correct?
Yes. In addition to the changes that we had here, we were, while the city was caucusing, we were also caucusing to discuss recommendations regarding the discussion on the part of the board in response to the presentation and the response to the presentation by the city. And we have, I don't know, six or seven or so, only five more changes to discuss with you to be responsive to the issues that came up. And Jennifer, are you going to cover those? Okay.
I'll summarize. These are five things that we heard the board say through your discussion. So these are, I guess, proposed changes that you might want to include or not include. One thing mentioned was an upstream and downstream station at Santa Rita Creek. Another thing mentioned would be to change the city limits the sampling points as the city limits change. So as the city limits move out, move that upstream point out as well. Or if on the other side the city limits move down, move that downstream point. So have the sampling points representative of being true upstream and true downstream points. That's number two. Number three is to post the stormwater management plan and the design standards plan to the web for 30 days public comment period. We would notify the interested parties list of this. And if the public had comments that could not be worked out amongst regional board staff and the discharger, a hearing would be held here before the regional board. The stormwater management plan is due to be amended in 180 days from the adoption of this permit, and then the design standards plan is 1 year. So those would be two separate postings to the web and potentially two separate hearings. Then number four would be that the City of Salinas would analyze all the data in their annual report, including the data collected through ag waiver sampling and CCAMP sampling. So even though that data that they are not collecting themselves that's being collected, they would include that in their analysis in their annual report. And then the fifth and last thing is that if CCAMP or the ag waiver program stop sampling at any of the locations, that Salinas would collect the samples in those locations.
So what you're saying is
they would pick up the responsibility if the other two agencies didn't.
Right.
Okay.
If they were to lose funding or something in those areas where those points are designated on the map.
I would make a small change to that. Rather than saying if they stop sampling, just say if the information wasn't available, because okay, there could be other reasons it wouldn't be available.
Go ahead.
Point of clarification on the Santa Rita up downstream monitoring, is this additional monitoring, or are you asking to adjust one of the other up downstreams to replace that, or is this addition?
My suggestion was an addition.
And it would be additional, but there is the potential that there could be, again, data available through the ag monitoring,
right,
that the city could use in place of that.
Okay. Does staff have
yes,
more?
Just... I will have to say that in hearing that this is additional costs for the additional two monitoring stations, if it was a switch out, or we could look at you know, readjusting those so that the numbers and the costs stay relatively the same. The city be in agreement to that. The additional sampling poses an additional financial burden right now that I have to raise that as a question. The other thing in regard to assuming sampling responsibilities, if the other ones fail, I don't expect that to happen, but it would not be responsible of me, at least not to raise the concern that we may then have an additional financial burden to take on those sampling responsibilities, and the city would object to that.
Any board comment to that?
Question.
Mr. Daniels?
I was looking at page 11 of our staff report, which talks about the Santa Rita Creek samples that had been done, and there's really sort of nothing was found on that. The only thing was an increase in turbidity, and everything else was either no trend or no change. As you see there, the extent of that creek through city property is relatively short compared to the other ones, so I might be willing to consider not doing that one.
The reason I wanted that included is because I know that they're in the process of annexation, and they're going to be starting the development during this period of this permit. And I think it's critical for us to know what's going to happen in that particular area. And there has been problems in that area before. I realize what staff has given us doesn't really show a whole lot, but I think in the near future it's going to, hopefully it won't change any, but we won't know.
Could we do monitoring at those stations on some much lower frequency rather than every year? Do it, in fact, I guess some of the cases four times a year, wasn't it? Could we do it at a lower frequency given its potential lower impact possibilities?
Well, I would say is once they start the development, and that's going to be probably 2 or 3 years down the road, time they get through the annexation process through LAFCO and they start their development plans and so forth. And
why don't we consider putting it in place at that time?
At that time.
So they're not going to have to do anything for the next 3 years or so.
Right.
But how much in advance of that time, Bruce?
I think as Russ is suggesting, when they annex this additional land, we would put that on as additional monitoring.
To begin on the date of annexation?
Yeah.
But does that, I mean, it's kind of a question for the city. Is this accurate, what you're hearing our board discuss right now?
The annexation,
it's going to take
board
place?
Members Jeffries, roughly, I mean, we're all guessing 2-3 years before that actually will be taking place.
Okay.
That would be a lot easier to live with than to do that at the front end of it when we are so concerned. But I will have to say again that if we're not talking about a switch out from others, it certainly increases the cost for us. And at any point in the term of the permit, it's going to be a significant extra cost. That's the one issue, and the other one is failure of the other groups to perform these additional background. If they fail in their efforts, I would like to think that someone would basically be in there saying, you know, you have a commitment to do part of that too. We are predicating our whole program on watershed collaboration, and if we're expected not to fail at that, we would certainly hope there'd be an expectation that the other players in this process providing the overview of the watershed health would also be held accountable to provide that.
I have a question for the city, or maybe for our own attorney. Is it possible that we could, or you could, require that this new development do means pay for the monitoring in that area, or is that going to run into Prop 218 problems because it can be considered a stormwater fee?
I'll need to defer that one to Patrick Whitnell in turn.
Good afternoon. Patrick Whitnell. I'm special counsel to the city. And I believe It's hard to say at this point, not knowing what development's going to come in, what's going to happen with the annexation, but one of the side comments I had with Mr. Russell is just that point, is having the developer fund a portion or all of that additional cost from the monitoring, because the only reason it's going to be monitoring is because we're we're annexing the land to allow them to develop and to hook into the city's infrastructure system. Yeah. So that's something we would certainly look at in terms of a shifting that cost to the developer.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if a development impact fee, if that would be considered a development impact fee and they're and disallowed without overcoming Prop 218 hurdles.
Well, development impact fee is not necessarily subject to Prop 218. Impact fee is based on the impact from a particular development on the city, and it's based on the estimated cost for that development share of
well, that seems
that
appropriate
impact.
Then.
So I don't think it would be a Prop 218 issue. I think it would be more of a determination of, one, how much of that cost should be attributable to a development or developments that come into that area and that are, you know, going to be discharging to the creeks that are going to be subject to that monitoring.
Well,
there's a lot of unanswered questions here because we don't know what we're dealing with, but those are sort of the tack that I'd recommend to the city that they take when looking at these applications as they come in.
Well, I want to support that, and you know, I would expect that as development impact fees go, this would not be a huge one for that extra piece. It would not be a nothing like a Quimby Act sort of fee in cost.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Actually, maybe this is what Ms. Bidding was just thinking about, where she was pointing. I think we got a little bit of apples and oranges thing here going with the question on the Santa Rita Creek area. Maybe it's just me, but when we're talking about annexation, it's the area that Mr. Russell, the new area that, Mr. Russell was talking about over there. The city's talking about annexing that area and developing that, and I don't think there's any question, there doesn't seem to be any objection to making sure that the sampling points are truly upstream. I don't think there's any question about that. But what I heard from the city is that the existing Bolsa Knolls area up there at the top of Santa Rita Creek, that is not subject to annexation. So that gets to the issue of whether or not Santa Rita Creek should be included, and that's, according to the city's testimony, there's no connection with the annexation question there. So doesn't tie together with waiting 2 or 3 years for annexation.
If you annex just east of Santa Rita Creek,
thank you.
If you annex and develop right up to here, are you saying you don't expect or there's no way that that's not going to impact or couldn't impact? I know it's not like annexing and developing this, but couldn't you have flow in that direction or impacts moving in that direction? And so in that case, you are stressing that particular body of water. Why not? Why not require that this annexation and this development pay for this monitoring?
If that's the reason, that would make sense. But my point is that I think Mr. Jeffries was talking about annexation of Bolsa Knolls.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. All right. Talking about the other one.
My statement was that the city has a sphere of influence over Bolsa Knolls now, so they have control over any development in that particular area. Before the county can develop that, they have to get permission from the city of Salinas to do anything in that particular area. That creek, Santa Rita Creek, runs adjacent to San Juan Road, that road that you see there. It's right alongside of it. And Dr. Presser, you're exactly correct that there could be, I don't know necessarily, but there could be some impacts with the development of that piece of property, because all you have is probably a 60-foot road through there that separates the two pieces from the creek that runs right along the side of the road.
Yeah, no, like I say, I think that would make sense if that's the rationale. So one of the things we were talking about when we were caucusing was the idea that we can always change the monitoring program. Later, we thought, well, let's just go ahead and make the change now since the board's already talked about it, rather than say we can change it later. But I think for this particular instance, it would make sense to just tell you we should deal with that down the road depending on what happens, and we'll change the monitoring program.
Okay, I would support that, that just so that there's a trigger that we all agree on, that should this area be annexed, that would be the trigger for requiring initially baseline monitoring, and then subsequently the up and downstream. Yes.
I think what you're saying, if I understand it correctly, is consistent with what we were just indicating, is that we're not exactly sure what direction of drainage that new development area will be and how close it will be to Santa Rita Creek. It will take a little staff research on our part to be able to provide you enough information to make a decision as to whether that is appropriate and would in fact impact that. We don't have that information today to provide to you definitively.
Well, clearly, if you're a mile away, if your development is a mile away or three-quarters of a mile away east of the creek, then it's less compelling and imperative to justify that monitoring piece because of this new annexation and development. So I guess I'm agreeing with you that with a better sense of what the annexation consists of, what the development consists of, then we can go back and say, all right, add in this piece.
So what would be the process then? Obviously, that is likely to occur within the five-year permit term. Would we then have some kind of a reopener, provide the information as it's available? How does that work?
Yeah, we don't need a reopener in the permit because I have the authority to change the monitoring reporting program. So what I was recommending is, since you got so many unknowns there, you know, when is it going to happen? Where is it going to happen? Which way does the drainage go? I think that makes sense for the board just to continue to delegate that to me, for staff to take a look at. We'll make the change down the road.
Certainly the intention is clear that if there's a significant impact to that area in terms of development, then we should be monitoring.
Okay, that's agreeable.
So how will regional board staff know if that has been annexed?
I was thinking that if we wrote into the monitoring reporting program that they would be required to do upstream and downstream sampling stations on Santa Rita Creek when that strip is annexed to the city. So that annexation would trigger that sampling, and they would just report that in their annual report.
Well, again, since we don't know what the drainage patterns are and whether or not it's actually going to drain that way, it seems like it makes sense for them to simply notify us of their annexation plans.
Okay. Then you could review them and see.
Not after the fact, but during the process, so that the baseline monitoring is also a possibility.
Okay. That would be that's fair.
Are annexation plans enough, too? Do you need any more specific information about development plans or subdivision approvals?
I think the main
approvals?
Thing would be to alert us that they're going into the process, and then we could communicate with them in terms of their plans.
Right, and it'd be our responsibility to provide you the information to make that decision.
Right.
That's agreeable.
So as I understand it, then, of the five things that was being considered, the Santa Rita monitoring will be being crossed out, and the condition of annexation reporting is being added.
I think that makes the most sense.
Mr. Chair. I can live that with Mr. Chair, but I just hope, you know, that we don't lose that in our memory banks. That is there going to be something to trigger the staff to ask that in the future?
No, we'll include in here that they have to notify us.
Oh, okay, fine.
Include
fine.
In the monitoring reporting program that the city will notify regional board staff when they annex.
Because my memory is not as good as it used to be.
You haven't been on the board long enough, Russ.
In fact, I think that would be a good policy for all of these plans. You know, if the boundaries of any of these agencies change, it would be good for us to know about it.
Gary.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair. Oh.
Hold on 1 second, Don.
Okay.
You're next.
On the monitoring that we're requiring, isn't that lovely? The monitoring that we're requiring of Salinas, is the level of monitoring that we're requiring at the level it is because we have these other groups doing monitoring also that they can use? In other words, if C-Camp wasn't there and the ag folks weren't there, would we be requiring the city to do more monitoring than we're requiring now?
Perhaps Donette could better answer this question, but I believe that we would be requiring them to do that monitoring that ag program,
okay,
because we need that upstream and downstream to determine.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know. Thanks. Then because of that, I think it is fair for us to require the city to provide that monitoring if the others can't. So because we would be requiring them to do it anyway if the others weren't doing it.
Yes, that's how that program is set up. So they're doing a comparison of upstream and downstream. That's the basis of the whole program.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Don, go ahead.
Well, I was going to just try to move this along if everybody's satisfied.
Well, let's see. Any more comments?
Yes.
Dr. Backer, go ahead.
I personally don't... How can I say this gracefully? I guess I can't. I don't see how... I would like to see those two additional sites. I mean, I don't, given that if all goes well, you, under the 2004 permit, the city samples four sites, and four additional sites only if data warrants. To me, it's not a large increase for a higher level of protection. So I would like to see those sites added. What, did I not make sense?
Yeah, you did.
Okay. Oh, you did.
Can I follow up on this?
Go ahead.
Is there something, Matt, I see we're requiring sampling four times a year on these other sites. Is that right?
There's in situ is twice a year, lab is twice a year. Water toxicity is four times a year, and then bioassessment is once a year.
Oh, okay.
The thought that I had as you all were speaking is that if the concern is new development, typically one of the main pollutants that we get off a new development would be sediment, which it is in itself can be toxic to animals. But if we were doing the toxicity tests, we probably wouldn't pick that up. And so my thought is that perhaps if we were concerned about costs, the toxicity tests are expensive. Those might not be as applicable in this situation, and therefore they might be able to drop out and include just the lab and the in situ tests, and then the bioassessment would pick up if we had any sediment burial of animals and so on. Just a thought.
Go ahead. Any other comments?
Just commenting on the phone. If that area is within the city's primarily residential, that would be, to me, a reasonable compromise. That is, you're not looking for toxicity,
mm-hmm.
but the other parameters
mm-hmm.
would be.
I can go along with that, too.
I mean, I just... There's a door open in terms of creeks leaving the city that's not being watched.
So, Mr. Briggs, what's being proposed? An additional...
Well, as I understand it, from the discussion prior to that is that that's on that particular area up there. Isn't that the one that's potentially going to be annexed in the near future?
No. I think we got three alternatives on the table.
Yeah, that's
one.
Yeah, the name
one is that we defer on the Santa Rita area.
Okay.
We defer until changes happen in the future, and that would be the annexed area. And that would be essentially saying that we aren't requiring monitoring for the status quo condition for the reasons that Donette said earlier, or the reasons that she left it out in the first place, is it's a relatively small stretch of the city, it's predominantly residential, and we have that kind of information for similar areas of the city already. So that's one proposal, is to leave it out subject to review later as that annexed area might affect it. The second one is Dr. Bowker said he would rather just see those in there, period. And then the middle ground position that Donette Dunaway suggested was we have them in there, but that we not have the toxicity testing for the reasons that she stated, so it would be less costly. So those are the three positions. And it seems to me that the original recommendation, where we would wait and see what happens with the annexation, is okay. I don't know that we're giving away the store as far as not having ongoing monitoring for that small section up there. And it's also, I think, being responsive to the city's financial crisis to make that minor concession.
You know that that was going my idea anyhow at this point in time, because there is a lot of a lot of potential changes that are going to be occurring, but at some time within the 5-year frame of reference here. And if the our EO has the authority to require whatever is considered necessary for monitoring changes, albeit whether it's on the larger parcel that's definitely been committed for annexation and construction along the Gabilon Creek, and if that occurs, it might, as been pointed out, trigger the need for the additional monitoring of the other creek up there. That's all within the in the future, and it's built in, even if we adopt it at the present time. If additional monitoring needs to be is felt to be required, then the EO has the power to go ahead and change that.
Okay, so I think we're ready to bring this to closure.
I would like to make the motion that
go ahead
that the agreement that the staff issue the waste charge requirements order for the city of Salinas as agreed to,
and with the five changes.
With all the changes, yes.
Understand the annexation and location and no monitor.
I thought we took out the Santa Rita change.
That was part of our final recommendation, that would be replaced by the notification of annexation activity.
I see. Yeah. Okay.
And that's what you're.
And then Dr. Villeneuve, I presume that also includes the changes that our attorney went over with the text.
Yeah, I think including all the negotiations and changes and adjustments that have been made in the last hour and a half or 2 hours.
Just so we're clear, Mr. Briggs, can you lead us through the changes that are being incorporated, or Jennifer?
Would you like me to review those?
Okay.
Yeah, so that we know what changes are added to the motion,
okay,
or the staff's recommendation.
We have six now.
Six, okay.
So the first is when the city limits change, then the upstream or downstream sampling points will change to be representative. They will move with the city limits. The second is to post the stormwater management plan and the design standards plan on the web for 30 days public comment period, notify the interested parties list if there are comments or concerns that cannot be dealt with between the municipality and the commenter, then the public commenter may request a hearing before the regional board. The third is that the City of Salinas will analyze all data, including the data coming from the Ag Waiver Sampling and C-CAMP, and report that in their annual report analysis. The fourth is that if any C-CAMP or Ag Waiver monitoring locations, if they cease monitoring at those locations, that Salinas will collect samples at those locations, or if the information is not available, Salinas will collect samples at those locations. The fifth is that the City of Salinas will notify Regional Board staff when they annex land to the city. And the sixth is the upstream and downstream sampling points at Santa Rita Creek will not include toxicity monitoring.
That's not part of...
That last one I don't think is part of it.
That's not part of our recommendation.
What, that's not part of it?
That was one of the options.
It was one of the options.
I was recommending against that.
But so we understand that one. I believe that change is left in the hands of the EO.
Okay. Got it.
Depending on what happens with an annexation.
And the text changes that we showed on the screen.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Earlier.
Okay.
So that's the motion.
Second. Okay. Mr. Jeffries has seconded. Any further comments or discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. Thank you very much.
Good Thanks luck.
Thank you.
Thank you very
much.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Donette.
I'm signing off.
All righty.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
How much more time do you think you have?
For what?
To finish.
I don't know. A
couple hours?
Yeah.
More cards.
Okay.
Item 14.